I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon. I am Maria Chalaios along with Governor Spencer Cox. And again, we are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. And Governor, always so many questions. It seems like an hour just isn't enough time to handle them all. But let's start out. My goodness, what great snowfall we've seen. Does this bring you some relief in this drought?
Well, Maria, it's great to be with you again, and we do have a lot of questions and a lot of them concerning the drought that we're in. It does bring me a little bit of relief. I will tell you I slept better last night than I have in a long time. But I have to be perfectly honest with the people of Utah, and that is that this is kind of a blip on the screen when it comes to how much snow we need this year. We had a very wet October, so the good news is that our soil, the water content in our soil is 16% higher than the median. That's really, really good news. It means that any snow we get will go into our reservoirs. So we're starting from a strong place, and that's because of the storms we got in October and September. Now, the bad news is we had a really dry November, and we're starting behind when it comes to just our average snowpack. So we have a tremendous amount of making up to do. This first big storm of the year will absolutely help, but we need lots of those storms, and so as hard as it is, and we encourage people to be safe, we're grateful for our snowplow drivers, but we need these storms, and I'm glad to see them kind of lining up. We've got another one coming tonight, and it looks like we've got some more next week.
Is there something coming up in the legislative session to address water issues, Governor?
Yes. In fact, we will have several bills. I've been working on them this week and met with bill sponsors. We're actually drafting those bills with them, and this is going to be a time of conservation, the biggest conservation package that we've ever proposed, as well as the largest proposal in a governor's budget ever, and those will be focused in a couple areas. So one will be really in conservation, making sure we're monitoring and we're metering our secondary water connections, helping to get rid of unnecessary grass, making it so municipalities can't mandate grass, that we allow for waterwise landscapes, and then a significant investment in helping to modernize and improve our agriculture water usage, and getting grants available to farmers to optimize the water that they're using now, so they can still get the same amount of crops and even increase yield in their crops, but use significantly less water. Those are all ways that we're going to be able to save water in a time of drought and make sure that we have water for drinking next year.
Speaking of the legislature and Utah lawmakers, they have called for an audit of the elections. Tell us, do you support this audit, and how do you think it impacts voters and their feelings about the elections?
Sure. I have no problem whatsoever with audits. We do more audits than when it comes to elections than probably any other state out there. We routinely do internal audits. As lieutenant governor for 7.5 years, I was able to oversee elections in our state, And so we would do those audits ourselves with counties. And in our state, like most states, elections are actually run by counties. The state oversees it, but the actual implementation, this is 29 county clerks. That's where it happens. We did an audit. The legislature did an audit just 2 years ago in 2019 when I was lieutenant governor. We passed with flying colors. We have no problem whatsoever with scrutiny. We recommend we recommend it. We think it's healthy. And in fact, every single year since I've been lieutenant governor, and including this year with our incredibly capable and talented new lieutenant governor, with Lieutenant Governor Henderson, we have proposed improvements to the election system. And every year the legislature has partnered with us to get those improvements done and those upgrades done, enhancing security, making sure that we make it easier for the right people to vote and harder for the wrong people to vote. That's what the citizens want. That's what we demand. And that's what we expect. And in fact, we actually have a proposal already that the lieutenant governor has been working on that is going to forward with the legislature to improve and strengthen our elections next year. And so I say all of that to say this, we welcome scrutiny. We think it's helpful. We think it's important. And I have no doubt that we will be able to show the people of Utah that we have 29 counties that are running elections the right way. Now, my only concern is there is a small but very vocal group of people who really don't care. I mean, they claim they care about audits. They don't. If the audit comes back and says, yeah, everything looks great, they won't believe the audit. We've seen that over and over again. They believe in conspiracy theories, and they really want to tear down our election system in the state. And so I don't think that this will help with those people. But for anybody who's really interested in knowing how we do elections, we are an open book. We bring people in all the time to monitor elections. We watch them as they run the machines, as the vote counts, all of those things. We don't connect our machines to the internet, so they're not subject to hacking. We don't we have actual paper ballots for everything that we do, even on the machines, which we don't use as much anymore. We were one of the few states that had the machine actually print out a ballot, so that we had a paper trail in everything that we did. And we feel very confident in our abilities and what this audit will find.
Okay, Governor, the callers are starting to line up with their questions. We will take a break and come back with their calls. The number to call, 801-575-8255, and you can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
And thank you for spending your noon hour with us, Maria Chalaos, along with the governor this afternoon, taking your calls and your text questions. And Governor, our first texter is asking if Utah is doing anything to draw electric vehicle manufacturing to the state, or even battery manufacturing.
Well, thank you. We're certainly seeing a tremendous uptick in the air that people have for electric vehicles. We did put money in our budget to expand the infrastructure that is necessary, so charging stations in rural areas so that people can enjoy electric vehicles. We have had conversations in the past as manufacturers are looking to expand operations or looking for new operations. We had serious discussions with Tesla over their battery manufacturing plant, which they ended up putting in Nevada at the time. So we are always looking at, especially at the manufacturing field. We've got a proposal coming from my Office of Economic Opportunity that will look at enhanced manufacturing in the state and reshoring some of those manufacturing operations that have been overseas. And so we've been very competitive, and we've seen significant expansion in the manufacturing industry. Those negotiations are private until they become public. So I can't talk about anything specifically right now, mm-hmm. but just know that we are constantly looking at that. I will say, though, there is something that I think is concerning there, and that is that in order to continue to create these vehicles and those batteries, we need the critical minerals, especially copper and others, that are found in Utah. In fact, there are 35 critical minerals that the federal government has designated. We have 28 of them here in Utah, obviously copper being a big one. And the data shows that we will not have enough copper to keep up with the vehicle production at current current production methods. We'll run out in around 2025. And so we need much more mining, and we have to do that in a safe way. There is a national security component to this as well. It's a huge mistake to outsource those critical minerals to China or to places in Africa that are owned, mines that are owned by the Chinese, where they're exploiting workers and they don't have any environmental protections in place. And so we had conversations with Western governors, with the federal government, with the Canadian ambassador this past week, all on the importance of increasing mining of these critical minerals so that we can improve our environmental outputs, specifically around electric vehicles and other options.
Governor, our first caller is Wes in West Jordan. He wants to talk about redistricting. And Wes, what is your question?
My question is, when the people back in 2018 passed Proposition 4, which required that a commission draw the new maps for congressional districts, the legislature decided to ignore that and drew their own maps. So my question is, what did the governor like about the legislature's maps more so than the commission's maps? And if he didn't even see them, even though the legislature would be able to override a veto, why did he not veto the bill and have show the people that he had their back by going with what they wanted?
Yeah, thank you, Wes, for the question. We talked about this a lot. I don't know that I have anything more to add, except to just say this. What the people voted on and what the people passed under the Constitution of the state was a recommendation. That's all the Constitution allows the Redistricting Commission to do. The people did not pass something that said that the legislature had to adopt the maps that were put forward by the Redistricting Commission. And so I've been very clear on this. I've been clear on this for 2 years when that bill was being run. I told people this was exactly what was going to happen. I warned people that unless there is a change in the Constitution, the legislature is always going to draw the maps, and that's what was going to happen. So you asked what I liked about it more. I guess there are two things that I liked about it more. One, I do like and I do believe that it is important to have rural pieces of every district. I think we're better represented when we have when every member of Congress represents both an urban part of Utah and a rural part of Utah. So I like that mix. That's something that I appreciated. And the other thing that I liked more, again, I don't know that I like this. It's just that I promise to follow the Constitution, and the Constitution says the legislature gets to draw the maps. I wish the Constitution said that the governor got to pick the maps. I would love to be able to do that. My maps would have looked very different than the legislature's maps, but that's not what is allowed. And so I told the legislature from the very beginning that unless they did something legal, that I would follow the Constitution and allow them to draw the maps. And that's exactly what I did. I understand that there are a lot of people that don't like that. There are a lot of people, by the way, that would like to gerrymander a map for their party that would make it easier to have more Democrats in office. Right now in the state of Utah, we have about 850,000 registered Republicans, and we have just a huge disparity. And that's the way the legislature was able to draw those maps. They did have a veto-proof majority, a significant veto-proof majority. There's no question that these are the maps that would have passed no matter what I did. And so I decided to, again, as I told them before, that I would follow the Constitution, allow them to draw the maps. So we have another 10 years until we do this again, and I suspect that there will be a push to try to change the Constitution to not allow the legislature to do that, and we'll see how that fight plays out.
Governor, our next texter is asking, what are you doing to speak out against racist and hate speech here in Utah?
Well, thank you. So I've spoken on many occasions regarding race and hate speech, and specifically around what we're seeing in some of our schools, unfortunately. I had a meeting, so again, answering the question, what am I doing? Just last week, I met with all of the superintendents in the state, and we talked about some of these specific instances that have happened in their schools. We talked about some of the things that they've done right, some of the things that they've done wrong, and more importantly, there was a really good communication session, listening and learning about what we can do to improve, learn some best practices. So there are some schools that are doing some great things, and other superintendents were really interested in listening and learning from them. I hate that that we continue to put this pressure on schools to help deal with these very difficult issues. These obviously are things that I hope would be dealt with in the home. That we would have that parents would talk to their kids about racism and how inappropriate some of these comments are and some of the things that are happening there. But if it's not going to happen there, it has to happen in our schools, and we have to be able to deal with these very difficult and terrible situations and deal with them quickly and effectively so that every child in Utah feels welcome in the state. I love our state, and I love that most people in our state, a super majority of people care deeply about everyone, regardless of their race or their religion, their skin color or what language they speak, and it's really incumbent on all of us to step up and speak out when these things are happening and make sure that we are helping to make Utah a safer place for everyone that lives here.
Governor Jesse is our next caller, and good afternoon, Jesse. What is your question?
My question for the governor is in regards to the medical marijuana facilities that we have here, and I'm just wondering why it is that a 1 gram tank here costs $90, when if you look at the shops that they have in Colorado, it's substantially cheaper. So it's almost cheaper for people to drive across state lines. I'm wondering what the state's going to do to bring the prices kind of more in the same range as out-of-state options are.
Well, Jesse, thank you. I appreciate the question, and I may not have an exact answer for this. It's been a long time since I've had a conversation with our team about what's happening with actual prices in the state. We've been working really hard to implement the program that was just passed a couple years ago to bring medical marijuana facilities into the state. It's a very complicated and laborious program to get the regulations in place to set up the facilities that are growing the marijuana, processing the marijuana, and then of course distributing the marijuana and selling those. I don't believe that the state is setting any of those prices. That those prices are more likely driven by the market forces. And as we continue to expand completely the growers and the distributors here in the state, that should have a downward impact on prices, but it's certainly a conversation that I'm willing to have with our team and get more feedback on what is exactly happening with those prices and if there's something we can do to put them more in line with other markets in surrounding states. So I appreciate the update, Jesse, and that's something I will follow up on.
Governor, next texter is asking if there's any talk of bringing back the yearly safety inspection on vehicles. They state they're seeing a lot of people without headlights at night or taillights and possibly bald tires, and they think it's worth the $25 a year to make sure that everyone's safe to be on the road.
Yeah, so this is an interesting conversation that we've had. As most people know, that we did away with safety inspections just a few years ago. I know that we have our safety team, the Utah Highway Patrol, our Department of Public Safety has been trying to keep kind of detailed notes and research on what is happening out there. Are we seeing an increase in accidents as they investigate these accidents? Are they are they related to if there is an increase, is it related to a lack of inspection requirements and what we're seeing out there? So we're constantly reevaluating this. We'll present that to the legislature. I don't know exactly where we are right now with those studies as we're paying attention to that, if we have seen a significant increase, but certainly that's something that we will continue to reevaluate. I know the legislature said when they passed that bill a few years ago that it's something that they wanted to monitor closely and see if it was working or if it was causing more problems. And certainly I think we'll have some interesting information to share with them when they get ready to meet again in January.
Governor, we need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. We will come back with more of your calls and questions up next. And again, that number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255.
To join, let me speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls and questions right now. Let's go back to our phone lines. Chris has been waiting very patiently. And Chris, what is your question for the governor?
Yes, Governor. First, I'd like to say thank you for all that you do. You're an excellent governor. And one thing I can tell we have in common is you're definitely a family man that I respect and a great father. And so my question is what we can do for those like myself who have a past. I'm a felon. I've never had any violent crimes, any crimes with victims, nothing of the sort. I'm a recovering addict. I was in state custody until I was 18, and at which point, the day after I turned 18, I had to move out and was on my own. They didn't verify that I had anywhere to go. So I had a lot of bumps in growing up. I'm now 35 years old and have an 8-year-old daughter. And everything I do is to give her a better life, but I can't even really get an apartment. I have to have a family member put it in their name just so I can give her a better place to live. And same with employment. Even though I've been able to make six figures, they don't care if you have a record. So what can we do to get a bill through to help those like myself? Because it really hurts our kids, and they've done nothing, to deserve any less of a chance. So
Chris,
that's where I'm at.
Chris, hey, thank you. First of all, thank you for calling. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for your vulnerability and congratulations. You obviously have had some very tough circumstances in your life, and you've been able to change things around. And those are the kind of examples that we need. Chris, I agree with you on this one. And I want you to know that we're in the process right now of reexamining our criminal justice system. We put in place some important framework and changes a few years ago, and now we're reevaluating how well those have worked. They've worked well in some areas and some areas not as well. I will tell you, I was with the county sheriff, rural guy, somebody I know and appreciate, and we had an interesting conversation. This was just a few weeks ago, and he said, we've tried to change things on the front end to prevent people from getting into the criminal justice system. So these are changes since you were there that are making. And to try to get people help so that they don't end up with a record, if we can avoid that. And while I think that some of that has worked, some of it has not. We have not funded it necessarily the way that we should have to get the treatment and the help for people like you who have been addicted and need some help to get away from drugs or whatever the addiction is. And so we have to fund that piece. But he said, we need to hold people accountable on the front end. He's absolutely right. He said, but I would be willing to do much more on the back end. Once people have paid their debt to society, you know, especially in victimless crimes, as you've talked about, where they're not a threat to other people, improving our expungement laws and removing those records so that you don't have this, you know, problems with employment, problems with housing, because you're exactly right. We let people out, and if they have a record, and we make it hard for them to get a job, hard for them to get an apartment, hard for them to get back into society, and then we're shocked when they end up around the same friends, still addicted, the same problems that they've had in the past, and we can't imagine why they end up back in jail, right? And you're an example of somebody who's been able to avoid that, but it's just been harder for you. So we can't take away all the consequences, but we should be able to make it easier. The good news is right now, as I mentioned, we're going through this process. Our team, through our criminal justice experts and leaders, have actually been going across the state and listening to people, getting feedback. They've had this listening tour. They've listened to law enforcement officials, people like you who've been incarcerated, education experts, and more, and they're still collecting feedback. I will share your feedback with them as well. But if anybody is interested, you can submit your ideas or your thoughts. I'll give you an email address right now. It's CJ Reform, so criminal justice reform. It's cjreform@utah.gov. And so cjreform@utah.gov, and you can please reach out and let us know. Also, reach out to your local representatives. I think you're up there in the Heber Valley. Representative Mike Kohler and Senator Ron Winterton are up in your areas. But this is something where I think we'll be able to see some changes and hopefully some progress over the next year.
All right, Governor, our next texter is Michael, and his question is about the food tax proposal. He has some questions about how that's going to work. For example, he says an example was given about a single parent receiving a supplement for food if their income is low. And they're wondering if it's too low, if their income level is too low, would they also be able to qualify for SNAP benefits? Will there be a supplement for a higher income bracket? He's just wondering how it's all going to work.
Sure. I appreciate the question. So this is a proposal that we put forward. Ultimately, you know, it will be up to the legislature as we work through the process over the next few months to see what we're able to get done. But our proposal is that it would be available up to $150,000, depending on the size of your family and the number of children that you have. And most people would benefit. In fact, well over 90% of the benefit are those for making less than $100,000 a year, and significantly more, again, based on family size, to help offset what we're seeing with rising inflation. The way it would work, and we're still working through some of those details, is that it would be a refundable tax credit. So we have refundable tax credits in the state and in our country. Generally, those come when people file their income taxes at the end of the year. Then they would get cash back or this credit back. However, we recognize that especially for low income individuals, waiting an entire year isn't going to be helpful. And so we're working through a process to be able to for them to get 25% of that quarterly, and that we would be able to do that through some of our other benefit systems. So again, for very low-income individuals who are receiving some other benefits, they would get this benefit as well, distributed in ways that they are used to without having to file to receive that. So those are still some of the details we're working through, but we want to make it as easy as possible for those that would qualify to help offset the rising inflation that people are seeing at the grocery stores this year.
Governor, before we take a break, I'd like to ask you a question about the homeless in these freezing temperatures. And since the overflow facility isn't yet open, what is being done to help the homeless?
Well, so we're working to get that overflow facility open. We're not turning anybody away. We have warming stations there. We have people that are going out at nights, and again, especially when we have these snowstorms that hit so quickly. And we have amazing volunteers that go up and down the streets every night trying to find people who are still outside and getting them into to these warming stations to better conditions. and then helping to get them services so that we can find housing for them. We have dedicated professionals that sit down. They go through a checklist, asking questions, trying to find out what they qualify for. Are there housing options available? Other places where they can stay? Do they have family members? If we can help them get to their family members. And so it's a really exhaustive process to sit down with every single individual and help them find out what they need and how we can connect them with those services. So if you happen to be out there and you happen to be listening right now, please go to any one of our homeless service centers. There are people there waiting for you, and they'll help to make sure that you have a place to stay tonight.
A quick break. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. And Troy, you're up next on the line.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255.
To join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for this final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Governor Spencer Cox, and let's go right back to the phone lines. Troy is there, and Troy, what is your question?
My question is focused on unvaccinated illegal immigrants that are being transported to majority red states throughout the United States. My question is Utah taking a position on this or doing anything towards curbing these problems? I know Florida is, and I know Texas is. I'm just wondering if we're doing or taking steps necessary, considering our homeless resources are stretched to the seam. So, yeah, that's my question. Thank you, Governor.
Well, thank you, Troy. I appreciate that. So we're not seeing any unvaccinated illegal immigrants being bused into our state that we're aware of or that are taking up any of our homeless services or resource. So we're certainly not seeing that. We are concerned about border security and making sure that only legal immigrants are coming into our country. You know, it's really interesting. This has been such a divisive issue around immigration, and it doesn't have to be. It turns out it's our politicians that make it divisive, not the people of the United States. When you do surveys of both Republicans and Democrats, by the way, a majority of both of them, this is actually one of those areas where there's pretty broad agreement that everyone believes that we should secure our borders and prevent illegal immigration, and then that we should fix legal immigration and make it easier for those who are legal to come into the country and to be you know, employed and be with family and those types of things. So that's one area where I think there is broad agreement. We had our National Guard troops. We had over 100 of them that just spent a year down at the border under our direction, and I was able to welcome them home just a few weeks ago, including a good friend of mine who was down there for a year helping to protect our border with Mexico, and I'm really grateful for the work of our National Guard, the intensive work that they've been doing down there. So thank you for the call.
Governor, I'd like to ask you about COVID, get an update. I see that some of our numbers are dropping, but what are your concerns headed into the holiday season?
Yeah, well, the good news first, Maria, and that is that our numbers are dropping. We're seeing numbers now. Back, I think it's been about August was the last time that we saw numbers this low, and hospitalizations are coming down. It's certainly welcome relief and much needed. There's obviously still too much of this Delta variant out there. We're unfortunately still, our hospitals are very full. We're still losing 8 to 12 people every day, and younger people, unvaccinated people, mostly, and so that's certainly troubling, but I'm grateful to see the downward trend. What's concerning to me is the new variant, the Omicron variant that we are seeing, of course, in South Africa. Great Britain has seen a significant spike. We're starting to see some of that on the coast. We've had a couple cases here in Utah, and really it's the unknown about that. What we do know is it spreads much, much quicker than any of the other variants that we've dealt with. We also know that prior immunity, especially from Delta, the Delta variant, may not be as helpful with this one. And so that concerns me as well. But there are some positive signs out there. Positive signs are that that boosters seem to work very well against Omicron, and so we're encouraging everyone to get their booster shot. We have about, I think about 500,000 Utahns who've received their boosters so far, and would encourage everyone to do that. Also, some initial data that tends to show that that this new variant may be much more mild, and so while more people will catch it, a smaller percentage will end up hospitalized or dying from that. So that's good news. But our hospitals are so strained because of a lack of labor, our workforce, and because they've been so busy. And now we're starting to see other things like the flu and RSV that are filling up our hospitals. So even though our hospitalizations have been as high as 600, a little over 600 from COVID, we're now down around 500. We even had a day under 500. That's good news. Those beds are being taken up now by people with other illnesses. And so if our hospitals fill up and we have a significant outbreak of this new variant, even if it's more mild, we could see some impacts to our healthcare system and the survival rate of those who are suffering from COVID. So more than anything, again, our healthcare experts are just saying, get vaccinated, get boosted, and keep yourself safe heading into this holiday season.
Governor, we have a couple of texters who are concerned about the universal education savings accounts and are wondering whether you will support and hoping that you won't veto legislation surrounding them.
Well, I haven't seen any legislation
surrounding
those.
So apparently what they're talking about is allowing the funding to follow the student versus the program or system.
Sure. We'll look carefully at those. I've always been supportive of having funding that follows our children, that allows them to use that funding however parents decide to educate their kids, with one caveat, and that is that we're fully funding education in our state. When we're struggling anyway as the 49th state in the nation in per pupil spending, you can't take money away from our schools now and expect them to be able to still offer a high quality education. And so if we're able to fully fund our schools, if we were 25th in the nation, then I think we would be much more comfortable allowing funding to go away from schools. So again, I have no problem whatsoever. I'm very supportive of funding going with our students and getting them other places, as long as we're not taking funding away from our schools that are already struggling to keep pace. And that's a really important conversation for us to have.
Governor, on the topic of education, we've seen a couple of threats in our schools in the last couple of weeks causing lockdowns. And what are you doing? What are your concerns about this? What can be done to maybe eliminate threats like this? What is your position?
Sure. Well, certainly it's concerning, and we've been very, very fortunate in the state of Utah to have been able to avoid any of the the terrible stories and mass casualty events that we've seen in other schools and other states. And it's not because they can't happen here. At least so far, it's because we've been able to have law enforcement and school officials intervene very quickly when these threats are out there. We've been fortunate. We have the Safe Utah app, and I encourage, again, every parent, every child should have the Safe Utah app on their phones, their devices. We talk about that a lot when it comes to mental health. What we haven't talked about is there's a button on that app that allows them to report anonymously, to give a tip to law enforcement or school officials for some sort of any type of threat or behavior that kids are seeing or concerned about. And using that app, we've actually been able to intervene. A lot of these stories haven't made the news because they were taken care of, but in ways that prevented what could have been just a terrible, terrible tragedy. So we're also working on security in our schools, trying to enhance that. But again, we can't stop all of these things from happening. And we have to change the culture. One of the things I'm most happy about is that we were able to get $29 million a couple years ago, thanks to Governor Herbert's leadership and the legislature, for additional counseling in schools so we can work with kids to overcome this empathy crisis that we're having when we have troubled students, to get them help so that we don't end up in a situation like this. We have to be proactive in that area. I mentioned this morning, but a superintendent who, by implementing this and having a counselor in the school working with kids who are struggling, they were having an average of about 30 referrals to the office a week for bad behavior. And now that's down to about 3 a week. And you just never know what they may have prevented by working with these students, intervening, helping them, helping their families get the mental health support that they need, and hopefully we can increase mental health access in our schools and prevent something like this from ever happening.
Governor, let's end on a light note. Who do you think will win the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day?
Oh, well, that's the easiest question I've ever been asked on this show.
Well, that comes from a texter, even though I was curious to hear what you would say as well.
It's been an incredible year in the state of Utah. I mean, we have 3 teams with 10 wins. That's never happened before. We wish all 3 of them. I'm an Aggie, and so I'm a little partial. We're conference champions, too, and we have a game on Saturday in the L.A. Bowl against Oregon State, and I have no doubt that my Aggies will prevail. BYU has a big game in the Liberty Bowl down in Shreveport. They've had an incredible year, and we wish Coach Sasaki the very best. But I'm going to be at the Rose Bowl, and I will have Ute gear on, and we will be cheering for the University of Utah, and have no doubt. I mean, they've had an incredible, especially end to the season. The way they finished, they might be the best team in the country right now. The way they're playing, not at the beginning, but certainly right now. And I really like our chances against the Ohio State team.
Governor, always more questions than we have time. So we'll have to catch those people next month. You're joining us the third week of January as well. So for now, have a very Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too, Maria, and to all your listeners, we wish you the very best. Enjoy the season. Be safe out there, and Merry Christmas. Thank you.
All right. And you've been listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.